아멘.
Before I read, I want to thank and say hi to my grandma in Florida. Our reading today is from Mark's Gospel. In the morning, while it was still very dark, he got up and went to a deserted place. And there he prayed. And Simon and his companions hunted for him. When they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is searching for you." He answered, "Let us go on to the neighboring towns so that I may proclaim the message there also. For that is what I came out to do." And he went through Galilee proclaiming the message in their synagogues and casting out demons. The word of God for the people of God.
Well, it is good to welcome each of you today, and those of you joining by internet, welcome Grandma down in Florida. We're glad you're a part of the service, and all of you for being here today. We're fortunate to have you with us in worship. As we continue this series, getting ready for Super Bowl Sunday this afternoon, the two teams coming to Indianapolis in 2 weeks will be determined. We either are going to be invaded by people from Boston or Baltimore, or New York or San Francisco. Last week when I was in Naples, Florida, for the first Sundays in the South, I was waiting for a table at a restaurant one night. There was a fellow sitting beside me who felt I would be interested in learning why his San Francisco 49ers deserve to be in it. So he started going through every game they have played. And fortunately, his table was ready before the end of the season. So we're going to have interesting people here in a couple of weeks. And what we're doing in worship is using some of the metaphors from football to talk about the spiritual life. Some of the goals, the attitudes and behaviors maybe that we want to focus on in this new year. So 2 weeks ago, we talked about the value of community. And we thought about the huddle. Last week, Dave preached an awesome message about what it means to be a real MVP, living a life of servanthood and awareness of the needs of others. So today we use another. Now, if you're somebody who likes to know, how long am I here for? How long is this message going to be? What's coming? Well, I'm going to help you out today. You can organize this message around three key object illustrations, okay? Three key object illustrations. Here is one. Here's another. And here's a third. So the way this is going to work is I'm going to make 1 point with this one, 1 point with this one, and 3 points with this one, okay? So when we get to the third point here, you know you can start getting your coat ready, and it's just about time to leave. And we begin with the first object lesson, and that is the headphones. Headphones are an invaluable part of football, and these are fresh from Lucas Oil Stadium. Authentic headphones that in a couple of weeks, who knows, maybe one of the head coaches of the teams will be wearing this set of headphones. I'll try to leave a hair in here somewhere. Maybe one of the quarterbacks or one of the players. You usually see that in a game. When a player comes off the field, he goes over to the bench and puts on headphones. The coach wears headphones. Why? Well, they're listening to somebody upstairs. They're listening to somebody up in a booth who can see the whole field of play and tell them what they cannot see. Tell them how things are working, what they might need to change, what they might need to do. So a key part of football is headphones. Now, you can probably intuit where I'm going with this in the spiritual life. We all need direction from above. We all need direction from the one who sees what we cannot see, who can perhaps tell us how things in our lives are really going, what we might need to change or put into our game. And in the spiritual life, the headphones that we have is prayer. Prayer. Now, this is what we see in the life of Jesus, somebody devoted to the need for prayer. But before going to that, I want to use the next illustration, which is this cell phone. Now, this cell phone is very much like the one my mother has. Whenever I call my mom on her cell phone, and by the way, I got permission from my mom to use this, so I'm making fun of her just a little bit, but she was okay with that. Whenever I call her on the cell phone, it goes straight to voice message. What does that mean? It's turned off. Turned off all the time. So I'm talking to her on the home phone one day, and I said, "Mom, why is your phone off all the time?" She said, "Well, I only use it when I need to make a call. If I have an emergency, if there's somebody I need to call, then I use it." And I said, "But Mom, some of us would like to reach you." And she said, "I know." I got the point. But does your prayer life ever look like this? Does your prayer life ever look like something that you use when you need it? When you're in an emergency? When you have something to request or ask? When you need to do the talking? Now, I'm not really asking that to be critical. Not at all. I'm asking it because if there's any element of truth about prayer in your life that looks like that, there is a whole other side to prayer, a whole other benefit to prayer that can make a very significant difference in our life. And that is the benefit we see in the life of Jesus and what prayer meant to him. For Jesus, prayer was like headphones. In the story we heard a moment ago, it occurs very early in the ministry of Jesus. And we learn about a secret in Jesus' life, a pattern that was a regular routine. Early one morning, he left the house where he was staying, left the village to go be alone and pray. He would put on headphones. And surely he would talk. But he also listened. And since I can't hear myself talk right now, I'm going to take these back off. Because prayer for Jesus was something in which he received and that made a difference in his life. It impacted him. And we can learn from observing this secret something about what prayer can mean for us. So here's the third illustration. I want to talk about parts of this story in Jesus' life and what are some of the benefits that are gained from prayer. And let me just say, a message on prayer, one sermon on prayer, is sort of like describing the Grand Canyon in one word. There's just so much more to it. So we're going to focus on a part of prayer, the benefit of prayer, what it can do for us. And with each point, I'm going to use the glass to illustrate it. So let's look at the first line from this story we heard a moment ago. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house. Why do you think the gospel writer took time to mention the time of day? That it was early in the morning. It was still dark. Why does that matter? Well, when you put it in context of what happened the day before, it starts to make a lot of sense. This happened on the first day of the week. That means the day before was the Sabbath, our Sunday. That Sabbath day, Jesus began by going to the synagogue in Capernaum. Now, Capernaum was a much larger town than where Jesus was from in Nazareth. So no doubt there were many more people in the synagogue. Who knows? They may have even had multiple services at the Capernaum synagogue. So Jesus is teaching that morning, and before the sermon ended, a demon-possessed man comes into the sanctuary. Now, I thought it was distracting when we had a fire alarm. Imagine a demon-possessed man interrupting the sermon. So Jesus goes to the man, casts the demon out of him. And when the service ended, Peter said to Jesus, James, and John, "Why don't you guys come back to my house? My mother-in-law is staying with us. She's a great cook. She'll probably have this wonderful meal for us." By this point, Jesus is probably a little tired. A nice meal sounds very good. So they go to Peter's house. But when they get there, they find out that his mother-in-law was sick that day. There's no food on the table. Jesus must have been pretty hungry. He went straight to his mother-in-law, healed her really fast. She hopped up and got lunch ready. Finally, Jesus can relax. But then they discover something. News of what happened in the synagogue that morning spread throughout town. All of the sick and the demon-possessed in Capernaum are lined up outside the door. You know, as a pastor, I just relate. What would I feel like if I had been Jesus? I mean, I know what kind of condition I'm in after three services preaching. I get home on a Sunday afternoon, I'm wiped out. When I have to be back at the church for other activities on a Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening, I look like a cast member from the show The Walking Dead. I'm just out of it. And here's Jesus now, continuing to minister. I mean, what kind of shape would I be in if I got home on a Sunday afternoon and after lunch one of the kids said, "Hey, Dad, all of the sick and the demon-possessed in the Washington Township are lined up down the driveway and around the corner." Jesus ministered to people, it says, until after sunset, until after dark. And yet the next morning, before the sun came up, he's going alone to pray. Have you ever felt in your life like a really significant prayer life is a luxury? Sure, you'd like to pray more. Sure, you'd like to do more Bible study or get in a group in a church or go on a retreat, but who has the time? If you're really honest, when you hear people talk about all of the time they have to give to their devotional life, inwardly, do you want to say you don't have enough going on in your life? If you were busy like me, you wouldn't have time to do all that. But then you read Jesus' life. And you say, how could he be busier than that? Doing things all day long until the dark of the night, and yet the next morning, before the sun came up. What goes on in prayer for Jesus that in a state of exhaustion, he still makes it a priority to get up and go do it? Here's the first illustration with a glass of water. A speaker was talking to a group of people one day about stress management. And he held up a glass of water just like this, and he said, "How much do you think it weighs?" And people started shouting out answers, 20 grams all the way up to 500 grams. He said, "The absolute weight of this glass really doesn't matter. What matters is how long you intend to hold it. If I hold this glass for just a few moments right now, it's pretty light. If I hold it for an hour, I'm going to have an ache in my arm. If I hold it the rest of the day, I might need medical attention. It doesn't matter how much it weighs, it matters how long you hold it." Jesus discovered that when the stress of his life ratcheted up, he needed help holding things. And in his prayer, he experienced the mysterious power of God that gives strength, that gives help in the midst of all the busyness and the hurriedness of life to hold things together. What you see in Jesus' life is the busier things get, the more committed he gets to finding time to pray. Now let's look at another line from the story, verses 37 and 38. When they, the disciples, found him, they said, "Everyone is searching for you." Now just hold on to that line for a moment. Everyone is searching for you. He answered, "Let's go on to the neighboring town so that I may proclaim the message there also, for that is what I came to do." As a result of prayer for Jesus, he was able to keep life in perspective, to keep focused on what he's called to do and who he's called to be. It's pretty easy sometimes to let our priorities, to let our sense of what we ought to be doing, and in fact, who we are, get determined by external realities, the conditions around us, what other people are saying. Now, we can understand the disciples, can't we? I mean, they have gained a crowd. There is a momentum to what Jesus is doing. Why leave? Let's stay here. There are a lot of people right here who need to be ministered to. Jesus knew he did not come just to serve the needs of Capernaum. His ministry is bigger and broader, and as he got away to be alone and listen to God, it kept life in perspective. That can be an easy thing to lose. When life gets going fast, things can get foggy. We can lose perspective on just what we ought to be about doing and the very types of people we are trying to become because of all the demands around us. We've got to get alone. We've got to get alone to keep life in perspective. So once again, the glass of water. The National Bureau of Statistics says that if you take a fog that is 100 feet deep and covers 7 city blocks, so picture that, 100 foot deep fog, 7 city blocks, and you condense it into moisture, you will have less than 1 glass of water. Right now, this water has the potential to create a fog in this room where you could not see me. Right there. Sometimes life is like that. Things get to going fast. So much is going on. It's beyond our control. And all of a sudden, things that really aren't that big have just blown up. And we don't know what to do anymore. We're ready to throw in the towel. We're ready to say, I can't handle this. That's it. I'm gone. But when we keep conversation going with the one who's above the fog and can see everything going on in life, sometimes what we hear that voice saying is, calm down, hold on, stay faithful, remain steady. And over time we realize, okay, what I thought was really, really huge ended up not being as big or as awful as I was afraid it was going to. Or maybe something that really is awful, we find a way to get through it that we did not think we could otherwise. Jesus would get alone to keep perspective. But this is what I believe was the greatest benefit to prayer for Jesus. I believe it's the greatest benefit to prayer for all of us. Look at one last line. It says that he got up and went out, but to a secluded spot. and prayed. He didn't just go somewhere to pray. He got away to be alone. He got away from any distraction. He got away from other voices. Why? I believe it was for this, so that he could remember his baptism. I believe that's why Jesus prayed in very lonely places, so that he could remember his baptism. And what did he hear at his baptism? When he came up out of the water, the Bible says, the voice of God spoke to him and said, "This is my beloved son. You are my beloved son with whom I'm well pleased." That happened before Jesus really started his ministry. Before he did a thing, he heard the voice of approval on his life. I believe Jesus had to get away from other voices to stay in touch with the voice of God. Because otherwise, it would be very tempting to live life for the other voices of the world. The voices of the world who say, "Oh, we love it when you do this for us." And voices that might say, "We don't love you when you stop doing this." And to keep true to himself, he had to stay in touch with the voice of God, who says, "This is not about what you do. This is about who you are. And you are loved by me. You are accepted by me. You are beautiful in my sight. You are my beloved child." I don't know about you, but I need that. I served a church one time where a woman in the church, an elderly woman, would greet me after the service every Sunday. She would shake my hand vigorously and say, "That was the best sermon I ever heard," every Sunday. "You are the greatest preacher ever." One time she said, "You remind me of Harry Emerson Fosdick." Now, if you don't know who that is, Harry Emerson Fosdick preached at Riverside Church in New York City from the 1930s through the 1950s. In my opinion, the greatest preacher in the English language of the 20th century. I would read books of his sermons and go, "Wow, if I could just preach like that." Well, hearing this woman every week, I started to think, Harry Emerson Fosdick, Billy Graham, Rob Fuquay. I knew without a shadow of a doubt, this was a very, very bright woman. One Sunday, we had a young woman in our church who was responding to a call to ministry and went to seminary. She came back and she preached that Sunday. After the service, same woman shakes my hand. "You did it again. You preached the best sermon I ever heard." And I heard laughter, not my own. I heard the laughter of God, laughing at me as much as with me. And when I walked back to my study alone, I felt God's laughter die down. And then God asked me two very important questions. If 1,000 people came out every Sunday and said, "You're a great preacher," would that make what I say about you any less important? And then this one. If no one ever said that, would what I say about you be enough? I'm still living with that one. I would like to say for this soul of mine that it's humble enough to say to God, "Yes, But I have to struggle with that one all the time. And say to God, remind me again what you say about me. And help me to let that be enough. And the only way that it comes for me is when I get alone. And I put on my headphones. And I turn up the dial. And I listen. I have made you in my image. You are my beloved child with whom I am well pleased. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. I have loved you with an everlasting love. I know the plans I have for you. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you future and hope.